Hey, ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the number, we were low last week, Greg, like the number 154 podcast
really?
In the world.
Really? That's sad. That hurts.
It's really sad. It is time for Cheap Heat. What you hear in the background is not only the physically large and physically strong Stack Eye Greg, it is the clippers of Hip Hop Mike giving me a haircut during the podcast. Because I was just meeting with my friends at Foot Locker this week. Be ready, as DJ Khaled would say. Because we were talking about the SummerSlam plans. And when you're a baller, you know, who's selling these collaborative projects like we did such a great job last week, you sometimes have to elevate your game and start doing things like getting haircuts during podcasts. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think they thought it was going to be me first.
Why would they think that?
I mean, let's just face it. We know why they would think that I would be the first one to take us to a barbershop.
Oh, because you're black?
Yeah.
I thought you... Well, you are also Uptown Malcolm.
Yep.
And so being from Uptown, you know, I guess the barbershop is sort of a way of life.
It is. But as a wrestling fan, you know, we tend to stay... I posted a picture. You'll notice there are no windows in that picture.
What do you mean?
No barbershop windows.
Oh, fast. Because you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You got to be mindful.
Still got to remember where you are.
So, pardon the buzz here for just a little bit, guys. I need to get this haircut. And I realize that there are certain people who are going to use this as even more rationale to crush me and say that the podcast has fallen apart and is a disaster? Yes. But are those the people who said that Mauro Ranallo was bullied out of WWE?
Yes.
And now he's back as doing the best job that he could possibly have, being the lead voice of NXT? It's the same people, right?
If only, you know, the one regret I have when that whole Mauro Ranallo thing was going on was that
right.
I just wish that there was someone or maybe like a group of people or with all the voices in wrestling that there was somebody that stood up and said, you know, maybe we don't have all the facts and we should listen.
Oh, no, there was someone. That person was me.
Oh.
Yeah, that was me. And everyone said, and now listen, people are still going to say, just because Mauro's back with the company, that doesn't mean that none of the things happened. And I hear that. But I'm just saying, guys, let's think for a second. If something really terrible was going on, what's the likelihood that this would have been the solution? And maybe, I'm not saying nothing went on, because I don't know.
Right.
But maybe...
Which is what you said the first time.
Of course. Maybe it was just a mix of things, and here we are. Like, it was a mix of several things, like SmackDown wasn't the best fit, and, you know, all these things together.
And maybe he didn't want a tour.
Who knows?
Things.
And either way, NXT is a great fit. I'm so excited, honestly. I'm not just saying that. I don't know Mauro that well, but I think it makes me want to watch NXT more, having him call it. And that's no disrespect to Tom or Vic Joseph, the new play-by-play guy, or anyone else. But having Mauro for that show, a show that's supposed to be all about the wrestling, it's a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I just feel bad for Percy Watson. You know he's going to be up out of there soon.
No, I don't think so, though. Don't you think they'll keep Percy?
Why would you need him? If you got Nigel and Mauro already, the two of them can hold it down. They don't need a three-man booth down there.
I'm guessing, though, my thought is they'll keep Percy. My guess is Mauro's just replacing Tom. Right. Although last week I noticed, I think Tom was off of it last week, and Vic Joseph was on it.
I don't know who this Vic Joseph person is.
Vic Joseph is new. He's doing Main Event, and I think he did one NXT also. Okay. He's been working NXT for like the last 6 months or so.
Okay.
But anyways, I'm happy Mauro's back. Hopefully it won't negatively affect Percy, who's just starting to sort of get his legs a little bit and figure it out. He's a really good dude. Anyways, guys, a lot to discuss this week, and we have to start. Is there anything outside the ring besides Mauro?
Besides Mauro, I didn't see anything really outside of the ring.
That really jumped out?
The Women's Classic.
And speaking of which?
New competitors.
We learned. So any known?
Tessa Blanchard is one of the competitors in the women's...
Daughter of Tully Blanchard.
Yes.
That's interesting.
That is an interesting development. And
Especially because...
With her in the mix, I think she's going to have to be my pick, my early pick.
Well, you just love the idea
winning
of
it all.
Tessa Blanchard and Charlotte Flair.
I do.
I mean, of course.
I do. I love the idea of her winning it all and then going right at Charlotte.
Or joining with Charlotte, something like that.
Well, I mean, I think of it like this, right? Ted DiBiase and Dusty Rhodes had a feud in the late 80s, early 90s when DiBiase was when they were both in WWF.
Right.
And then when Cody Rhodes jumped into WWF, the obvious thing was have him and Ted DiBiase Jr. feud, but instead they teamed up and formed a real good tag team. So I think that these young women can do the opposite of that. Their fathers are famous for being in a powerful group, and instead of joining up, which you think would think they would do based on the history, they just go at each other.
I like it. I like where you're. I like where you're at with this, SGG. And also, speaking of women's wrestling, today on Netflix, GLOW.
Oh, that's today, Friday.
It's out. It's out. That's the whole season.
I didn't realize it was coming out so soon.
Today. Yes.
How many episodes do we know?
It's a full season. I don't know. At least probably 8 to 10.
Yeah, Netflix plays some games, though. Sometimes it'll be a 6-episode first season.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah. And I haven't looked yet. You have Netflix on your phone?
I do. I'd love to see them up there for 10 episodes.
I'm very excited about it. The reviews have been awesome. Obviously, for those of you who paid attention to it at all, first of all, it's starring one of the main characters from Mad Men. And I was a big fan of hers on Mad Men.
Yeah. Wasn't she in Community, too, right?
Oh, was she? I don't know. I don't know her from Community, unless I do and I don't realize it.
10 episodes of GLOW.
There you go. And it is, we should say, it's loosely based on GLOW.
Okay.
These stories are made up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the behind the scenes, I think it's based on things that happened and the way things were done. But the storylines of the show, it is not like an actual, it's not a docuseries by any stretch. Right. This is just based on it. But I'm just excited to see how they did it. And as a result, I went back yesterday and revisited the pilot episode of GLOW, which is on YouTube. You know, the pilot episode is absurd. It's so crazy. It's not what I remember watching as a kid. The pilot episode was just like, it took them 15 minutes to get to a match. It was like all like this Vegas stuff and these vignettes and promos.
So it was basically a Monday Night Raw.
Basically. You know what? It's a very good way of putting it. So speaking of which, that leads us to this week. And also, I forgot to mention this. Matt Hardy will be joining us later on the show. Yeah, that's right. I had a chance to talk with
version one, version two, broken Matt Hardy.
It's a mix of all. It's a mix. And Matt and the Hardy Boys will be in New York on July 7th on an incredible super show that we've talked about. Debut of Shinsuke at the Garden. Debut of Finn at the Garden.
Yeah.
Hardy's return to the Garden. Bray and Roman at the Garden. There's a lot going on. So we're going to talk to Matt Hardy later on about the return. I want to ask him about his run with MVP, which, of course, I was a huge fan of. I want to ask him about Edge. We'll get into a lot.
Oh, you going there?
Oh, yeah, I have to. I got to. So you can't talk to him and not bring that up. So, and also he's a dad for the second time, just had a newborn. So we'll talk to Matt Hardy later on. But SGG, we start with Money in the Bank. Your overall thoughts on Money in the Bank?
Overall, I thought it was a very good show. I enjoyed the matches. There were two things I did not enjoy, but we're going to talk about both of those things at length. I imagine. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a really good show. I thought all of the matches delivered. I really liked that tag match, Usos and New Day.
Yeah, yeah, they that was a nice match.
Yeah, and that women's Money in the Bank. I think the pacing of the show, like where they put all the matches, everything was done well. I just could not get behind the finish of the two Money in the Bank matches.
Well, let's start with the women's finish, obviously. That happened first. And there is a lot of heat. Now, first of all, there's a lot of heat because everyone knows I called Carmella to win.
Yep.
So, you know, there's obviously going to be a lot of hate, naturally, about the way that she got to that win. But let's just be clear. Who did I pick to win the Women's Money in the Bank match?
You picked Carmella.
That's right. And who won the Women's Money in the Bank match?
Carmella won.
That's right. So I just want to be clear about that. Now, let me try to not be a shill. And I say that because we know that I'm still critical every week. But I noticed I didn't react to it the same way other people did. My wife did. She was like, that's weird. Why did a guy climb the ladder?
I said the same thing, though.
I think that's what everyone felt. And so, but I could argue. And I'm trying to be honest.
I would love to hear this.
I'm trying to be honest in telling you maybe I'm being biased and I'm not thinking about it clearly. But the fact that everyone got so mad about it, isn't that kind of good booking? I mean, are we really looking at it seriously? Like, this is supposed to be a moment about women. It's the Money in the Bank match. Like, are we really? Is that what we're doing?
Yes, that is what we're doing.
We're treating it like that is, I don't know. Is that us being worked 100% to really think of it that way?
This is my problem, though, right? One, every time somebody does something and then we get upset about it, you can't just be like, oh, you're getting worked. That's part of the deal. Like, that's obvious. Whether I like the finish, whether I hate it, whatever, if I have any response to it, I'm being worked.
No. But if the response is people being angry at a heel, that's when you hear people say that the most. Because if the end result is you being angry about a heel.
Right.
Like, oh my God, I can't believe James Ellsworth climbed it. That's not fair. It's a women's. So we're basically, that's exactly what was desired.
It's part of the deal, though. You can't just dismiss it.
But my point is, though,
like that those criticisms are sometimes valid. So like people will say, oh, you're getting worked, and like to silence what's being said. But what's being said, especially in this case, is valid. Of course we're being worked. Like, we signed up for that. But then now when you get past the point of us being worked and listen to what people have to say, can you say that these criticisms aren't valid? I don't think so.
So what's the biggest criticism people have? Simply that a man shouldn't have been the one to climb the ladder in a women's ladder match?
Yes. Simply that this is you have the first women's ladder match, Money in the Bank ladder match, excuse me. It's been built up. It's been, like, even the way you saw that video package, you know, opening it up, how they focused all on the women and, like, they made a big deal. It's not like people made a big deal of this in their minds or whatever the case may be. Like, the company made a big deal about the women's revolution. And, like, anytime the women have the first anything, the company is the one to tell you, oh, this is the first time a woman's tied her shoelaces in the middle of a match. So now to see them build all of that up and make it all about the women and then take the focus away from the women at the most pivotal and crucial point in the match, it definitely was designed to get people angry. And it is getting people angry. And people's anger and criticisms are valid because that's sort of BS.
I'm just very split, and I can already see the tweets now, so have fun. I already know that people are going to yell at me for this, but I just, when it happened, I didn't, and I am the king of the women's division.
Right.
It's a big deal to me. I care deeply about women's wrestling, but I'm just imagining if I'm the person booking this, and I'm going, all right, what do we do for this?
So wait, if you're the person booking this, you mean to tell me that you're going to have a match with five amazing women, some of the most talented women you have in the company, and when you get to that point, like, it's already decided that Carmella is going to win, but you decide, you like, you're really going to sit down and take the pencil and decide that the way to get to that Carmella victory is to have a man tip the ladder, knock another woman off the ladder, so you already start off the finish with violence against women, and then have that same man climb the ladder because Carmella's too weak to climb the ladder herself, and then take the briefcase down, and then he doesn't even bring it down and hand it to her. He drops it on her. That's the finish that you're going to go with?
If you want heat.
That makes the women in the match so insignificant, and that's the finish that you go with in this 16-making match?
Yeah. That's called getting heat. I mean, I hate to be that guy, but like, if I was sitting there pitching and I go, what do we do to get Carmella the most over right now, and someone goes, what if Ellsworth wins? And they go, what? Yeah, what if we have all these amazing women in the match, and Ellsworth, the most pathetic lame duck man ever, is the one who steals it for her? When you think about it from that perspective, I do think, I'm not saying it has to be your favorite finish. I'm not even saying it would have been the finish I would have picked, even though I did have Carmella winning. But I'm saying I could see someone making that argument and doing it in a way that you find compelling. And you're like, oh, I get that.
Yeah,
like,
no, I mean, there's a way to do it. I just don't think that was the way to do it.
And the whole idea of like, oh, it makes them all insignificant. Let's just be clear. You know how many times in other ladder matches, like, a woman has tried to climb the ladder out of the blue? Someone who's not involved in the match runs in the ring and climbs the ladder?
Yeah, but nobody's done it successfully.
Right. Well, this is what makes it,
and honestly,
made it surprising.
Honestly, it wouldn't have mattered. It's just one, like, a woman climbing the ladder in a men's ladder match would not have mattered. Like, it literally would not matter because it's the one time in all the dozens of men's ladder matches that a woman gets involved and wins. This is the one women's match.
So does that mean that everything we do, if it's being propped up as like a cool moment for women, has to be done in a way that's like...
respectful?
No, not just... respect? It's wrestling, bro. This is not a respectful game. There are good guys and bad guys. Of course he's not respectful. Right. Look how he dresses. He's a piece of garbage. James Ellsworth is a failure.
You never had that $100 bill full sweatsuit?
Yeah, exactly. He's a disaster. that's the thing, Greg. I really appreciate that you're making this argument on the podcast because it's no doubt an argument other people had. But when you're having it, when you're actually saying the words, can you step outside it and think, like, this is a little bit seriously to be taking this situation? It's the Money in the Bank match, dude. It's not even a title. It's not even the title. It's
title of Jace.
It's title of Jace. We agree. But it's also a gimmick match that has become way bigger than it was ever supposed to be. And we put a lot on it. Like, yes, it's really cool they had a women's ladder match, and they did dope things in the match.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now we're getting another one on Tuesday where there will be a legit winner, and we'll have this thing.
Well, but I don't like that either, though. We're going to get to that.
That's fine, but we will have a legit winner of it, and what you ended up doing was really, I mean, listen, you could say there's another way to do it, but I don't know. The fact that Carmella wins in the cheapest way ever humanly possible, she didn't even climb the ladder, and she had the nerve to stand in the middle of the ring and say, I won the match fair and square. I love that. Like,
I will say this. The only thing that makes me kind of see it from your perspective is the fact that she's been using Ellsworth this whole time, and that, like, this is what it comes to, that he literally climbed the ladder. Like, he's literally, like,
he'll do anything
in front of all kinds of bullets for Carmella. That's the only thing, like, from a character development standpoint, as far as James Ellsworth and Carmella is concerned, that's the only thing that sort of makes it right in my mind. But it's mostly garbage that he...
I liked it, and I know I'm... Listen, I'd love to hear from someone else who actually likes it, because I know I'm going to get tweets from everyone who hated it and is offended and thinks I'm a corporate shill for saying it. I can tell you other things I didn't love this week. I've been saying that regularly. I think we crushed Raw last week in a way. I was happy I didn't get any phone calls, because we really crushed Raw last week. Yeah. But no, I just thought it was entertaining.
You didn't get any phone calls.
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was surprising. I also thought it was cool. I was really worried Naomi was going to lose. And it wouldn't have made sense, and I liked how they did it. I thought they made Lana look really strong instead. Yeah. I thought it was actually... I know a lot of people were crushing Lana's wrestling.
It wasn't the best, but
it
I
wasn't
mean,
the best. But
it was better than I thought she was going to do. And I'm not going to lie. I had the bar set really low for Lana as a wrestler.
Nah, and she picked... Listen, when you have someone who's sort of weak, but you want them to be impactful, what do? She picks a body part. She works that body part. She gets a lucky break, and she beats that person. And that's what she did, except Naomi Styles ends up getting the win. I think that was pretty well done. Now, the men's match... What was your overall take on the men's match? Because I enjoyed the men's match for the most part. Am I missing something?
I enjoyed the men's match for the most part, too. But I did not like that Baron Corbin ended up being the eventual winner. That's just how it is. I didn't like who they
chose.
You feel
like we're getting Roman Reigns with Baron Corbin a little bit?
No, I think that's an unfair comparison. And to the extent that... Baron Corbin is getting a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, of course. Baron was never over on his own the way Roman was.
Right,
I'm not saying that.
Exactly.
But I mean, in terms of getting just the a really big push. I mean, let's just call it what it is. Getting a really big push, and this is now yet another big step in that push.
Yeah, in that very limited sense, yes, he's getting the Roman Reigns. And I had somebody say this on Twitter, too, that Baron Corbin is Roman Reigns adjacent. I had to tell him, like... that's incredibly disrespectful to Roman Reigns. Baron Corbin has done nothing to the level of Roman Reigns. Like, Roman Reigns is on a 3-year hot streak of having fire matches on Raw and pay-per-view, and Baron Corbin can't even put two together from, like, his whole entire career in the WWE.
Oh my God, the burying of the cinch. He was good at the last one I was at. What was that? Backlash? The match with Dean? The match with Sammy, I mean. I like that last one.
I mean, come on.
I thought it was their best
Did match. You like that more than you enjoyed Roman AJ from Extreme Rules?
I don't like it more than anything, Roman.
Roman Daniel Bryan from Fastlane or Like, does it put him in the conversation?
No. But you're being too literal because you're too much of a fanboy for Roman Reigns.
No, I'm just a fan. Period. I enjoy great work. I enjoy
your Roman's valet, Jace.
And terrible work just doesn't.
Would you quit your job to just go like live with be Virgil for Roman?
No.
Would you consider it?
I don't know what that would entail. Like
nothing sexual.
If I have to like brush his hair and all that, then it's a non-starter. It's a non-starter.
Hold on. Not brushing his hair. Not tying his shoes. But like driving the car. Hanging out.
Well, what does he drive?
A nice car.
Okay.
You drive the car.
Okay.
You hang out with him all the time. Okay. You wait at the arena. You just kind of sit and wait.
So do I wait like in the seats or do I have like an all access back?
No, you're all access. Okay. Yes. You sit in catering.
Okay.
So you get to talk to me at pay-per-views and things
okay.
of that nature.
Okay.
Yes, Hip Hop Mike thinks it's better gig than the lawyer gig.
It does sound good. It does sound good already. I'm not going to lie.
So you are tempted. I just want
it
to
does
that
sound
clear.
Good. Yeah. Especially well, like if he has the right vehicle to drive. You know, if I get like a little wing in the estate, and also I've witnessed.
Yeah. By the way, Hip Hop Mike does this for much less. You see, he's cutting my hair right now. It's a very good point, Mike. It's a very good point.
Take this job, man.
And all he's getting, Mike's walking away with like 15 pairs of shoes today.
That's a good haul.
Yeah. He's out here.
Me and Roman Reigns wear the same size, man.
Yeah, by the way, that's how it worked out for me and Mike. He wears my size. So if Roman wears your size, you might be in business, man.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no. That's a very good point.
Great game.
It's a great point. And now look, now he's on a Hot 97. So before you know it, maybe all of a sudden you're going to the ring with it. Now you're walking out. So it's a risk. You're not guaranteed that, but there's a chance.
But it could work out.
It could work out. See, and he's offering, let's say, 150K.
He doesn't live that far from the Performance Center.
No.
He could take a step in the door in Roman Reigns' shoes, isn't he?
That's what I'm saying. So like 150K to go be Roman's Virgil.
Would that be my official title, though?
No, your nickname would be Verge, though. But people could think it's great, the Virgin. They call you Verge.
150K, that's not bad.
It's not bad. You could bring your lady down there.
Yeah, we'll have a wing in the estate.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you think about
the
it.
The Roman Empire.
You'd be a part of the Roman Empire.
Yeah. It doesn't sound bad. It does not sound bad.
So,
Baron Corbin, though.
You did not want. By the way, I was not. That was not what I thought would happen or what I was for. But.
I will say this, though. I do appreciate how a lot of the listeners and. Wrestling fans have sort of embraced that finish and with Baron Corbin as the champion. They looked at it sort of similarly to the way you looked at the women's match. I even had my friend Marcus, he texted me and he was like, you know, you have the five best wrestlers in the company or five of the best wrestlers in the company. And then Baron Corbin wins, like the sixth person in the match. Of course, this is great heel heat. Like, of course, this puts him over and, It's basically what you want after every event is you want everybody to come out of it bigger stars than they were before the event started. So, I mean, to that extent, I'm okay with Baron Corbin as Mr. Money in the Bank. I just don't want him to waste it. And it feels like it could be
wasted.
What
did you think about us jumping right to Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles?
I loved it. I think it's late, though. I wanted that at this year's Mania that just passed in Orlando.
Late? I mean, come on. Shinsuke just came up, though.
He did, but they could have. They had all that. Like,
they needed him down there, though, dude. What were they gonna, have you seen NXT recently? They're short on people, bro. They couldn't get away from him that fast.
But no, they're not short on people. I just think that the way they do the shows. Like, the talent seems. It seems like there's not a lot of talent there.
I'm not saying there's not talent there, but in terms of, like, can literally drive a pay-per-view.
Like, they have Drew Galloway. They have Bobby Roode. They have Chris Hero, Aleister Black.
You mean Drew McIntyre?
Yeah, Drew McIntyre. And
formerly Drew Galloway, formerly Drew McIntyre.
Cassius Soto, right. Formerly Chris Hero. So, like, they have people that can go. They have...
I love both those guys. And, you know...
They have...
Chris Hero is a friend. I love him. Neither of those guys is Shinsuke Nakamura.
They have TM61, but like you don't have to be Shinsuke Nakamura. NXT didn't have a Shinsuke Nakamura before Shinsuke Nakamura was there.
Yeah, they sort of did. They've had different people pretty much the whole time. There's been one person who's the out-and-out guy, and they still have that in Bobby Roode.
Right.
But...
And even while they had one person who was the out-and-out guy, they had a lot of talent around him, because you got to remember, like... When Bo Dallas was the guy in NXT and he was carrying NXT, you still had Neville and Sami Zayn, and you had Cesaro popping down there every once in a while. And then by the time Sami Zayn became NXT champion, you had Tyler Breeze, and you had Hideo Itami, and Finn Balor was just coming in. Kevin Owens was there. Like, they always had guys, and they got guys right now, but it just feels like they spread everybody out so much that you don't realize. Even the tag team division too.
Well, listen, but hold on. Let's be clear though. I mean, aren't we complaining about what's ultimately a good problem? We're going to get Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles.
Yes.
That's pretty tight.
It's just about when we get them.
And I'm guessing SummerSlam, right?
I'm guessing SummerSlam too, but I feel like now that's going to be too early. That feels like a high-stakes WrestleMania match for me. Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles.
What if they go all the way from SummerSlam to Mania?
I would love it. I'd love it. But they got to get the Goldberg-Brock Lesnar treatment, though. They got to get...
separated and...
They got to get a one-off with nothing at stake. And then the winner, like, talks mad trash.
Sure.
Gets up to the championship level. And then the loser works their way into a championship match. And then we get that championship match, Shinsuke versus AJ at WrestleMania.
Real quick, I just finished my haircut. How does it look?
I got to, hold on, let me get.
Oh, you're really going to take a look, a good close look here. You clean?
Oh, yeah, pay the kid.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Hip Hop Mike, I got good news. You're hired. Best haircut you ever get in your life. I am very excited that we'll get it. I thought the match was pretty good. It is interesting to decide when we'll get it.
Right.
But man, it's going to be good. AJ is so on top of his game still.
Yeah.
There's I don't see that going anywhere. All right. You know, we do need to get to the rest of the week though, because that Money in the Bank was Sunday.
Right.
And we jump into Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw, up from last week. We would agree, right?
I'd say so.
Definitely couldn't be worse than last week.
No. I mean, if it did get worse, they'd had a serious problem.
To remind me, how do we start the show?
I...
Come on.
I'm not sure how we started Monday Night Raw. No, didn't Roman come out for his announcement right at the top of the show?
Yes.
He came out for his announcement and said that he would be going for the Universal Championship at SummerSlam. He didn't care if it was Brock Lesnar or some guy named Joe.
And then him and Joe got into it.
Yep.
That's how it started.
He basically insinuated that Joe was a fake Samoan because he's not an Hawaii. And he doesn't have any of those tribal tattoos.
Mm.
I did notice that after Roman kind of got at him.
And of course, you probably believe this because you are Roman's verge. So you're probably like,
no, I don't get into people's cultural. That's between them.
You're not going to weigh in on that.
I'm not going to weigh in on
you're
that.
You're not going to start bringing signs that say fake Samoan or Jay.
I'm not. Samoa Joe once said,
people, I do not want to co-sign. No one should hold up a sign that says Samoa parentheses Jace Joe.
Yeah, I am not co-signing that either.
I do not co-sign that. I'm not a part of that.
Samoa Joe once said, if you put my name in your mouth, leave room to catch these hands. And with that in mind, I am not going to disrespect Samoa Joe.
Listen,
this podcast.
I think that is a very good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I have no interest in hand catching myself. So let's continue to break down Monday Night Raw SGG. Like I said, it was a half decent episode. But that being said, what are your biggest takeaways from this week on Monday Night Raw moving forward?
I like that they're still building Samoa Joe up as this destroyer, even though Seth Rollins managed to sneak by him. I like that they're still positioning him as a threat to not only Brock Lesnar, but to everybody on the roster. I'm really happy about that. And I hate that we seem to be getting Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins when the Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor thing was, I think, teased for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that would have been a better way to go. But I don't know. I don't know.
I will tell you one thing that has not changed on Monday Night Raw, and that is like a set direction of multiple things that we care about. We did, of course, learn this week on Raw that we will see Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns in a ambulance match. That's right, at Great Balls of Fire. Most people are most excited, of course, about the fact that I will be returning to the kickoff show.
Oh, they got you working the balls?
See, you know, it's things like that. How long have you been waiting for that?
I've been waiting. Well, you see, it was either going to be you or Sam, but somebody was going to have to get it. I'm sorry. This pay-per-view, I like the promo that they're doing with, like, the classic cars and the
jukebox.
That's
very me.
It's all very dope. But at the same time, like, that logo and, like, what do we call it? Like, how are you going to hashtag it? Is it going to be WWE Balls? Is it going to be, like, an acronym?
I think GBOF.
GBOF?
I think it's GBOF.
You got to figure that out. But nonetheless,
I'm working the balls. Yes.
Yes.
It's confirmed. I'm back working on the balls. I know people have been missing me. It's hard for a lot of people to go through the pay-per-views without me. But I'm back, and I want everyone to know that. And then I believe the same week as Balls, I think we're back in the lab for another Bring It.
Yeah.
By the way, have you ever read any of, like, the reviews of our podcast?
Of Cheap Heat?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
This guy, like, reviews all the wrestling podcasts, and he wrote a review of us last week, and it was like, after Rosenberg spent 5 minutes putting himself over on Bring It to the Table. It's like, true, okay.
Bring It to the Table is mage.
But it is mage, though. Did you see, by the way, speaking of putting myself over, did you see DDP tweet me?
I did see that.
That was tight.
Would you say, can't wait to see you next time I'm in the city or something like that?
You know, we're basically best friends, yeah, man. Yo, I'll tell you who I like to be friends with is DDP's daughters. I'm sorry, DDP. I'm sorry. Do you want to talk? Did we ever talk about the after party and DDP's daughters?
No, I don't think we did.
We never talked about it in the podcast? Oh, bless it. Oh, bless it. I got
to
tell you.
I'm not going to lie. I went to an after party for the food. I ate and I came home. You weren't DJing.
No. So you weren't around. Oh, I forgot. You were gone. The last like hour and a half I was there, I was just watching the Page daughters, the little DDP.
That's what they call the Page daughters.
I don't know what they're called, but me and Wale were just, I don't want to call out Wale, but we were both just like, this is fantastic. They were like, they were not, you know, they're like, they were not white girls who were dancing wackly to hip hop. They were white girls who were.
Oh, so they knew the moves.
They knew the records. They knew the moves. They knew everything. And they looked
lyrics,
good.
Lyrics,
doing
everything?
It. Everything. They were fly. Like, they were fly. They were, you know, they're a little bit of, like, southern, you know, sultriness.
Okay.
Maybe mixed in.
Okay.
But, like, fly. Like, I was very impressed. Sorry, DDP. I probably just ruined that relationship quickly. It was fun while it lasted. It was one nice tweet. Really enjoyed it.
Now you really can't wait to see
it. I think they may be stepdaughters, though.
Oh, yeah, 100%, right?
I think they're stepdaughters. In which case, I'm pretty clean on that, right?
I don't know.
Married. I didn't anything. I just sat there, guys, so. Oh, I forgot something I wanted to talk about that excited me.
Was that?
You look like you're about to ask another question.
No,
Do you have another question about the Page daughters?
I don't.
Because, okay. Just give me a. Big week for Bo.
Oh, yeah.
We got to talk about
Welcome back, Bo
Dallas. And
he had an impressive match against Finn Balor.
First of all, love the way he worked the match against Finn. Actually looked like a credible opponent, which was cool. First thing I noticed in the match is, damn, he's sure looking like a Wyatt right now. That beard's coming in nice, huh?
I did see that.
He was definitely starting to look like his brother. And then the Miz Ambrose storyline, which we talked about in briefly.
I'm still tired of those damn bears, but
I get it. And I was very tired of Dean and Miz. I just think it's run its course. I think introducing those guys was just what it needed, though. I'm much more interested. And finally,
I love it that he has an entourage.
He needs an entourage. He's perfect for the entourage. I love that he gets the entourage as he's having problems with his wife. There's a lot of opportunity there to do some cool stories of, like, then they get back together, but he's spending time with
his
entourage.
Boys, yep.
There's a lot you can play with there, and it makes use out of talented guys. Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas are talented wrestling family classic
guys. Third generation
guys
who have managed to just be kept off of screen for so long. It's crazy.
Yeah, I am very, very excited about the possibility of this. I'm looking forward to it. And we'll see how that plays out as it goes on. Also, I love the way Maurice just plays it really well, the anger towards him.
Yeah.
Him spilling, him pulling her in front to throw the champagne on it. Because here's the funny part. He has done the Macho Man Elizabeth pull her in front thing forever. Right? Like, that's yep. his thing. And it never has, nothing bad ever happened.
Nope.
And so she's never said anything about it. Even though it's men attacking him and he pulls her in front.
Yep.
And they're always like, oh, she's like, well, it's okay. It's a baby face. They won't punch me.
Yep.
But this time she throws the champagne on herself and that was too far. And then, of course, he goes to attack Dean, who moves out of the way. So he smashes the grandfather clock. I can't believe they managed to get me interested again. And entertained, I was back in and entertained again. I got to tell you, I was surprised by that.
I'm like you too. I'm excited to see where this Entourage thing goes for Miz because he's having a Hall of Fame worthy career at this point. And
wow, here comes Greg.
All he needed was a faction.
You think Miz at this point is on his route to being a Hall of Famer?
I think he already had the accolades, so they were gonna like squeeze him in there eventually at some point. And
an interesting thought I never thought about, Greg.
But now we're enjoying his work so much that everything else can sort of be retroactively romanticized.
I may steal this for bringing it to the table. Is Miz a future Hall of Famer?
He absolutely is.
Why did this cross your mind this week? It's a very strong point out of you, Greg.
I don't know. I've been thinking.
I'm going to change your name to the physically smart.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But it's true. I feel like this. He's been doing some of his best work even since. Like last year when we all contributed those columns to ESPN and Miz was the Intercontinental Champion, I still felt like he was the most underutilized because he wasn't like the number one guy, like the top guy. He's Intercontinental Champion right now, but still, like, I think he's what, second behind Chris Jericho for most Intercontinental Championship reigns ever.
Mm-hmm.
Triple Crown winner. He's main evented a WrestleMania, which is like an absurd benchmark because it doesn't say anything about the quality of the match, but
sure.
he was there. So he's done that.
It means you've been on top at least.
Yeah, he's been the WWE champion. He certainly has another championship run in this future. And he has been a part of some memorable storylines and great on the mic. He kind of really just ticks all the boxes. So
he what's all the boxes?
He ticks all the boxes.
You mean checks all the boxes?
He does that too.
Wow. That's a very interesting conversation. By the way, I was just tagged in something on. Oh, nice. They did something on YouTube promoting Bring It to the Table or something. Let's check it out, shall we? Let's see what this is. I'm excited to now see how this progresses because it has to be that we now get something slightly different out of the Miz storyline than what we had been getting previously. Look, let's see how this came out, guys. Here we go. Here's a social promo, apparently, for Bring It to the Table. Did you like that on Bring It to the Table when we did the...
Hey, it's me, Peter Rosenberg, host of WWE Network's Bring It to the Table. And before this Tuesday's second ever Women's Money in the Bank match, hosted by Daniel Bryan on SmackDown Live, let's take a look back at how you... the WWE Universe celebrated, welcomed, enjoyed, protested the first ever Women's Money in the Bank match back at Money in the Bank.
Wrong.
That briefcase is still so beautiful to me.
Oh, I love the new briefcase.
The white.
I got to tell you, this is one of the best ideas they've had for Bring It to the Table, including the people's
the fan
real
reaction.
I
love that too.
Natty's the only one in the ring. She could actually get this.
Charlotte.
This doesn't end well.
Charlotte. Oh, the electric chair drop.
Charlotte owning everybody.
How cool is that for the fans too? Like,
it's amazing.
Because WWE produces the best video packages. And then you are in a WWE video package, just like
it's the way people react is so funny that like it's a beautiful thing that feeds itself. The more you do this, the more people are going to do it. The more you have content you have, the more they want to do it. It's just a great cycle of things. And frankly, the reason I'm airing it right now is I haven't seen it yet, and I am curious to see just how who they chose in terms of the anger of Ellsworth getting it. So let's take a listen to that.
There he is, starting. It's
Ellsworth,
happening.
Ellsworth, come, Ellsworth. No! Ain't no controversy, man. No, ain't no controversy, man.
Your winner of the Money in the Bank contract and the first ever Miss Money in the Bank, Carmella!
Damn, no way. Piece of shit.
Yo, I like that. That was well done. That was really cool. Oh, that was great. I enjoyed that. Can I tell you guys something that I don't know whether it's appropriate to say or not, but I'm going to say it. I don't know if I've told you this off the air. Have you ever seen, you saw Carmella in person?
Yes.
When she came in and she was wearing, was she in gimmick or no?
No, it was like 6 a.m. She looked like.
Regular.
Yeah. I was going to say she looked like she just rolled out of bed, but she did not look like she just rolled out of bed. She had to have just rolled out of bed.
Right.
Well, here's what I meant to say, but it was going to come out wrong.
No, then I think you'll agree with what I'm going to say. I don't want to be inappropriate at all. I'm not saying this in a way that's whatever. It's just being plain. I've told my wife this. Without her ring makeup and gear on, she may be like literally the most beautiful WWE personality ever.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't want to say she looks exactly the same with makeup because then like that's a blatant lie, but like.
No, they make her look, like slightly a crazy version of herself. Yeah. Like it without it. With it way toned down, with her just wearing regular woman on the street makeup, like as a normal person, she really is one of the most beautiful people you will ever see in life.
I don't think she even had makeup on when we saw it.
I was going to say, and I really think I've seen her straight up no makeup at all. She's a stunning woman and so cool. And I got to tell you, I was so proud of her performance on Tuesday. I thought her promo was incredible. I thought that was one of the best promos by anyone in a long time.
And I like that she didn't let the crowd rattle her at all.
At all.
She dug her heels in. She said what she was going to say. And she demanded to be recognized as Miss Money in the Bank. It was all very flawless.
And it really was like shockingly flawless. Like I just want to say that. I wonder how you guys feel. Feel free to tweet us at Rosenberg Radio, at Stat Guy Greg. But give Carmella her props. If you haven't watched her promo yet, you know, she hasn't gotten that many opportunities to just get on a mic and go. She elevated, man. She was.
Even like her, like she addressed every issue. Even her saying like, oh, people have interfered in men's ladder matches. Like, what are you going to do? So, like now you're going to treat me different? Like, this is not something that ever happened before? Like,
I know, she reversed it. So you want to have to get sexist. She flipped the sexism on you.
Yeah.
And then when they all started yelling woo, she's like, another thing Charlotte stole from her pops.
Everything.
Like, she managed to get shots at everyone. I was, you know, I got to tell you, a big week, and this is what we should really need to close out with, of course, a big week for the big couple in the WWE, or one of the biggest couples in WWE, Carmella and Cass, because he had his moment on Monday.
Oh.
What is your thought, Greg, on the end of the Enzo and Cass era?
It's bittersweet. I, like everyone, has enjoyed Enzo and Cass's work for a long time, and it sucks sort of that they never had a tag team championship anywhere. They had several opportunities, but they never managed to win a tag team championship. Now, with that said, I think Cass, also,
shout out to Cass,
of course, Wrestle Rap. Also, he also surprised me on the mic. Like,
oh, he's great.
He killed it. And
people have been so wrong on him because he talks very slow and deliberately. They think that means he's not good. And I just don't agree with that. I think Cass is really good on the mic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was one of those people. I felt like tag teams get put together because they complement each other. And that's what makes like the great tag teams great, because they sort of fill in gaps in each other's skill sets. And I figured Enzo was the talker and Cass was going to come in and do the ring work. And Enzo was the body to get beat on by the heels. And Cass would come in to pick up the wins and things like that. But like you said, it's just people were just wrong when they said Enzo was the one carrying Cass on the mic, because that promo wasn't Enzo and Cass promo, and it was one of their best.
Yep.
And it was executed without Enzo saying one word.
That's right.
Enzo shed a tear.
Got to tell you.
One tear.
And I was going to say, let's be clear about this. In saying that, I do want to say that I thought Enzo was tremendous.
Oh, yeah. Enzo's performance was flawless as well.
He was tremendous.
He said nothing on mic, but there was a lot that he said off mic, and like he said things to Cass, and like the work was done on his face, and it was just, it was almost as if this was a new Enzo and Cass that we were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like the first time that we'd seen those two characters, and then they split them up. Because like we'd never seen a Cass on the mic like that, and we never seen a serious Enzo like that serious, like broken and hurt.
It was very cool. I didn't love how the actual reveal was done.
You mean with Corey Graves doing the reveal? Or?
No. I liked Corey's part, but when Cass just kind of came out and said it, in the ring, like that part, I think there was a way where like Corey should have directly revealed it, and it seemed like a surprise. By the time it happened, it didn't feel like a surprise anymore. They'd ruled out everything.
Yeah.
So there was slight flaws to me in that, but I thought Corey did a great job, and I really loved just Cass's delivery and Enzo's reaction.
That one tear, man.
Oh, and you know, it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes. My assumption is Enzo gets new muscle. Correct?
I would assume so too, but it's like, it's all, they could go anywhere with this. They really can. And like I said just now, this reveal, like this breakup, showed people that there was so much more to Enzo and Cass than we realized. And maybe it's the case, just as Cass was 100% or 1,000% or even 10,000% better on the mic than everybody gave him credit for, Enzo might be better in the ring than we all give him credit for. And so on this one, I'm just going to say that I really enjoyed the reveal on Monday Night Raw. I don't think they needed to stretch it out any more than it did. I don't even think that it dragged on too long.
No, I don't think so either. I thought that part was just right.
And I'm going to wait to see what Enzo has in the ring, because like I said, the one thing, I was a part of the camp that said that Cass is being carried by Enzo on the mic, and he shattered that. So I'm going to reserve more judgment on Enzo and Cass, and I'm going to let them do their thing.
It's hard for me to see this being something, though, that really is a one-on-one situation between the two of them. I just think this has to be more about, I mean, Cass will beat down Enzo,
right,
and then eventually Enzo will find the muscle that backs him up.
So how much time do they have between now and SummerSlam? Is it just Balls and then SummerSlam?
Your Balls first.
Yep.
Yeah, Balls. And when you think about it, it's gonna be a deep podcast, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you start out with that Balls, and then after that SummerSlam. So they could have a match at Balls.
Yep.
And Cass could beat the hell out of him at Balls. Yep. And then Enzo could find the muscle to back him up.
For SummerSlam.
SummerSlam.
Yeah. Because, I mean, this is they're setting it up early enough to tell a good story for SummerSlam. And they're both from New York. Like, do it right.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Or that's why they may have another one. It could be a second match between them there. Like, maybe that he finds a way to even the score. So he says,
I don't care if he takes a beating at Balls and then gets a revenge on a random Raw. I don't care. Just, you got enough time
to set it up right.
Yeah, to tell the right story for SummerSlam.
I'm saying is maybe he goes, the only way you can even the score with someone that big is a special stipulation. So yeah. they have a match at SummerSlam, but it's like, this is going to be something that would suit Enzo. Like, he needs weapons or whatever. You know what I mean? Something to make it work. But you're right. That's a really good point. The New York crowd, Cass being from Long Island, Enzo from Jersey.
No, Cass is from Queens, I believe.
Is he? I thought it was Long Island. Yeah.
Pretty sure it's Queens, yeah.
Same thing. Honestly, is how Queens and Long Island are adjacent to each other. It's the same
Queens
island.
Queens is actually, I mean,
people, it's Long Island.
People from Queens hate when you say this, but the borough of Queens is on Long Island.
So is Brooklyn.
And so is Brooklyn, yeah. So
you just like saying that everyone else is not Manhattan.
Yeah, it's true. But it's true. Everyone else is not Manhattan. Manhattan is the best borough.
And right. You just want to be clear
Manhattan
about that.
Manhattan has Harlem.
Facts.
You know, it has Wall Street. Everything that anybody pictures about New York is in Manhattan except for the Yankees. And they're like
and the, 50 Manhattan
feet from
Manhattan.
Yeah, they're right there. I can walk
and Brooklyn
Yankee
Bridge,
Stadium.
One half, guess where it is?
Exactly. In Manhattan.
You know what I'm saying? You feel really strongly about this.
I do. It's true. I mean, they don't like to hear that from the other boroughs. But
No. It's true. Guess what? It's true. And guess what else? It's damn true.
It's damn true. Oh, it's damn true.
By the way, Kurt needs a little work.
Yeah. I was going to say that. That's the one thing that I didn't like about the reveal.
It's great to have Daniel Bryan back. It's great to have one GM who can really deliver because Daniel's fantastic. Kurt, this is not the role. I get why he's here, and I don't know how long this is going to last, but I don't know about Kurt as GM.
Yeah. My issue with Kurt, especially with the Enzo and Cass thing, was like Enzo got attacked 4 weeks ago.
Yep.
Then there was 2 weeks of that, then 2 weeks of Cass getting attacked, and then Kurt says, all right, I'm going to figure out who did this
tonight.
By the end of the night. What the hell were you doing for 4 weeks? If you could crack the case in 2.5 hours, what were you doing for 4 weeks?
You know what? I couldn't agree with you more. It's a very good point.
Like,
this is what makes you a good lawyer, by the way. I couldn't agree with you more.
And then here's the worst part, though, right? Because he claimed he could crack the case, and then Corey cracked the case.
It happened. Have you been to Tavern on the Green?
I have not.
Would you want to go? Like, in general, does it interest you?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to experience it. I hear good things about the place.
It's pretty expensive, but it's not awful. The tavern.
That's one of the things that I've heard about that place, that it's pretty expensive.
The tavern burger is $26. That's not like...
Yeah, but I mean...
It's a lot for a burger.
It is. It's a lot for a burger.
But Tavern on the Green.
Yeah, but that's the thing, too. Like, if I'm going to Tavern on the Green, I'm not going to get a burger, though.
Okay, so let's say I'm looking at the menu right now.
Because don't you need to wear a jacket?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a jacket. I don't think. But it says, first course, Caesar salad, 17. Tartar, 18.
Okay.
Chopped vegetable salad, 18. I mean, listen, it's not cheap, but this isn't like... And then entrees.
This is like Manhattan upper crust, though, so I wasn't
Burgers, 26. The roasted organic chicken's 33. The salmon's 34. Cauliflower, 24. Lobster risotto, 44. Whole fish is 38. There's another organic chicken, 28. A rack of lamb for 46. I mean, it's expensive.
That's not bad.
But it's like, it means if you go in with two people, you're going to drop a couple $100.
Right.
That's about what I would expect for Tavern on the Green. But you get the whole experience.
But then, see, do you have to wear the jacket, though?
That's a very good point.
That's
I don't know if that's factual, though, what you just said.
I'm pretty sure you have to wear, like, you don't have to be fully suited and booted, but you need a blazer.
Let's see what it says.
When we say jacket, people, we mean blazer.
It says dress code, smart casual.
That's a jacket.
Smart casual? No, that's business attire. Or formal or business casual. This is smart casual. If it has the word
smart casual and business casual are like their cousins. They're basically the same thing, number one. That's jacket.
I'm calling.
Or at the very least, a cardigan.
Let's find out. A cardigan. I've never heard of a rule that says you must wear a cardigan.
It's smart casual. Cardigan is smart casual.
See what they say. You think they'll answer?
Of course. They see Peter Rosenberg's phone.
Thank you for calling the world-renowned Tavern on the Green. For reservations, please press 1. For directions and hours of operation, please press 2.
Is this Jeeves
for
or Belvedere or Robin Leach?
Three.
Who does this voice
for the gift shop, please press
the
4.
The gift shop?
Dancing, please press 5. For the food and beverage management directory, please...
Let's see here.
You're going to get another Brit or a live person?
Well, a Brit could be a live person. Even a Brit robot. That wasn't even a Brit. That was just a guy with a weird accent. That wasn't even a British accent. It was like a fake accent. Come on, guys. I got a question. You're being grave.
All of our reservations agents are currently assisting other guests. Please remain on the line, and the next available agent will assist you momentarily. If you would like, you could also make a reservation online at tavernonthegreen.com.
Yeah, that was British. The .com.
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell you what neighborhood of London that was from, but... This is why they hate us sometimes, the listeners.
I would love this. I just want to say, I know there are people who hate when we do things like this. I just want you to know that my people are the people who love this. This isn't promising, Greg.
No.
All our reservations. Russian agents are still assisting.
He's going to say momentarily again. Watch.
Your call is important to us.
Thank you for calling Tavern on the Green. This is Ellen. How may I assist you?
Hey, Ellen, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I have a question for you.
Yeah, settle a bet.
We're having, my friend and I are having a bit of an argument here. When it says smart casual for the attire for Tavern on the Green, what exactly does that mean for men?
So jackets are not required for men. It's sort of like business casual. Jackets are not required.
So like nice, people just wear like, you know, like khakis and a button-down shirt is fine.
That's completely fine.
Fantastic. Ellen, you're a doll. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
Bye. How does it feel to be wrong? I thought you were the physically smart. I thought you were the physically smart.
I would just like to say two things. One.
Sexist that I said you're a doll.
No. Okay. No, not at all. I mean, it is kind of nice to point it out. I didn't catch it. I don't think anybody caught it, but you snitched to yourself, so no.
All right.
Yes, I did say jackets were required. She said no jackets are required, so she squared that up straight out the gate.
That's right. But Phil Collins, no jacket required,
yeah,
baby.
I did also say that smart casual is business casual.
So you're trying to get something right.
Too. She said that,
but then she said, but that doesn't mean jacket.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, but not what you thought it was.
It's the same thing, but it just doesn't mean jacket.
All right, good. So either way, whether you saw smart casual or business casual, you would still wear a jacket for no reason. So you'd be playing.
It's not no reason. It's not required, but it falls under the umbrella of.
She didn't say no jacket required, but I'd really prefer it. She just said no jacket required.
Yeah, no, it's not required by the establishment, but a jacket is also smart casual.
Do you have a jacket with you today?
I do not.
Wow, sad. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that will do it for this edition. You can reach us, Rosenberg Radio, or at Sack Guy Greg. And I would love, this is the time of the year when I need you to start adding us on Twitter or Instagram, wherever you communicate with us, and let us know if you would, in fact, want to buy tickets and come out to another SummerSlam Cheap Heat event, because I'm in the process of deciding whether, in fact, I'm definitely going to go forward and book that so we can have another event. What special guests we'd have, who knows? You know, I work with WWE now. We don't know what could happen.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of big things can happen.
You never know. So I would love for you to tweet us and let us know if you'd be interested in coming to that. And, of course, go comment, rate, and support us. Now coming up, we're going to get into the interview with Matt Hardy. So I hope you hung out and waited for Matt Hardy. Greg, stay physically strong. Try to get less physically large. And I also want to say big rest in peace to Prodigy from Mobb Deep. Just a absolute shock to the system of everyone who loves hip-hop, particularly people who love New York hip-hop and, you know, people like myself who are a part of this world in New York. He was such a fixture, and it's been a tough one. I'm not going to lie, SGG, this has been a tough one.
Yeah.
This has been a real...
Felt like it came out of nowhere.
I know. Even though he has sickle cell anemia, it just was not what we were expecting. And for some reason, you're one of our listeners who, like, listens because of wrestling and, like, you like hip-hop, but, like, you're not super knowledgeable and you're open-minded, but you've never spent time with it. Mobb Deep's The Infamous album. There are tons of things that Prodigy's done that are amazing. The man has an incredible wealth of work. I mean, tons. But if you're going to check out one, I would say The Infamous would be worth your time. It's dark. It's violent at times, but it is brilliant. And that's your favorite Mob album, correct?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love Murder Music. I really love Hell on Earth as well. I love HNIC. I love Return of the Mac.
His stuff with Alchemist, too, is really good.
Yeah, Return of the Mac and Albert Einstein. There's a ton of great material. He's done so much. But forced to choose, I would go on ahead and check out that Infamous if you never have. And if for some reason we put you onto it for the first time, let us know. I'd love to hear that someone got put on, because Prodigy was an amazing guy. And he'll be missed. Now, Greg has to go to court, and I'm going to sit down with Matt Hardy. Hang out.
All that aggression inside you, you chose to take it out on an inanimate object. And not only an inanimate object. Hey, shut up!
Guys, you know I'm very excited. Friday, July 7th, one of the best cards I've seen in this area for a long time at a house show will be MSG, such a stacked card, and one of the names I'll be most excited to see return to the Garden as a member of the WWE roster would be this man, Matt Hardy. Matt, how are you?
I am excellent, man. Thank you, and I am very, very excited to return to Madison Square Garden in New York City, which is the mecca of it all. It is the best arena you can form, man. I'm so hyped to be coming back.
And should we really, you know, if we call your brother Caminero, should we be calling you Father Matt at this point? Congratulations on the newborn, my friend.
Thank you very much. Yes, I have the next generation of Hardy Boys here, right in my hands.
This must be a really cool time. How old is the baby, by the way?
The baby, as of today, is 2 weeks old, and
wow.
Tomorrow, my oldest son, Maxwell, often referred to as King Maxwell, will be 2 years old.
Really an amazing time for you. Were you sure at some point that this leg of your journey with you and your family and you being back in WWE would happen?
No, I think I always wanted to finish my career in the WWE. I think my brother and I both shared that sentiment. It's just the timing was right, and just the way, you know, by a interesting twist of fate, you know, to play on the pun, obviously a finishing maneuver, things worked out exactly right. And, you know, our contracts were up. We had a little free agency. We worked out a deal, and we made a surprise appearance at WrestleMania, which definitely will go down in my book as one of my greatest moments of my career. I loved it. It was so amazing the way it was kept on the down low. It was truly a surprise. It shocked people that evening. So I wasn't 100% sure. I always thought in the back of my mind that it would happen. I wanted it to happen, and fortunately it came to fruition, and it did happen.
And by the way, you have a pretty long list. You have as long a list as anyone I can think of in this generation of people who have moments that were sort of in that vein. You know, there's the moment when, of course, you came back against Edge, and that was amazing. Then you have your ladder match comeback after your injury many years ago. But that one, and I saw you, backstage just a few minutes after it happened, and kind of saw the glow on the face of you and your brother. It was, I was out in the crowd for that portion, and it was the moment where the feels happened. You know, that was the moment where I'm 37 years old and I felt 7 years old, and everyone started screaming. What did it feel? Just take us through that, from the perfect setup that I thought the New Day gave you to the reaction. Just what did it feel like to go through that sort of reaction?
I'll tell you, we knew we were going to be at WrestleMania for probably 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then we knew, probably about half that time we're going to be involved in the ladder match. So we finished all our commitments. It was a very stressful week. We, had a wrestling match, an appearance in wrestling match on Friday. Saturday we did Ring of Honor, where we wrestled Young Bucks in a 30-minute ladder match, which was crazy as it was. And, you know, obviously the pressure of just, trying to retain your health was with us. And then Sunday we had the something called the Broken Hardys tailgate party, which we did, which was like a 4-hour appearance, which was great. We finished that. We went back to the hotel and ate. And then actually I started watching WrestleMania in the pre-show on the network in the hotel. And just like taking a glimpse at the arena was like, oh my God, how overwhelming, how amazing is this? You know, in just a little bit of time, we're going to be in front of this crowd. You know, and then we came there after WrestleMania had already started. We were hit out in a bus outside the venue. And then when the winning segment ended and the Hall of Fame segment was going in, they rushed us into the building. We ran up five flights of stairs to where Gorilla was positioned. And then all of a sudden it was there, just boom, you know, there's Vince and there's Triple H and there's Michael Hayes and there's John Cena and there's Shawn Michaels. You know, and I have my wife with me. My son, you know, her father was with her, Senior Benjamin, you know, so it was pretty exciting because we just literally came from this appearance to the hotel to grab some food, then out to the arena. And then once we went down that ramp and just entered that sea of humanity, it was so overwhelming and so humbling and so flattering. And then to go through the match and finish it, and for the match to go as well as it did, and to get the reaction that we did, and for the people to be so familiar with stuff we've been doing pre-WWE, was amazing. And I'm sure when you called me, when you said I had that glow, it was just like the stress of containing that information for those 3 weeks and getting through, and the process had now been fully done, and we had gotten through the match and we were healthy and everything went good. You saw that glow of like everything, like the way.
Oh, it had to be incredible. And I, you know, this is my first year working and doing the kickoff show at WrestleMania, so I was there all day for the first time, and I didn't hear one person. The word did not get out that you guys were there. And maybe the best deke that you guys threw, the threw everyone off, was still having the tailgate party that day. I mean, that just makes it seem like, you know, they have their own event that day. Like, they're not coming. And, you know, but it's funny because people had expected there would be a return at some point, and yet somehow it was still just one of those moments where the surprise is that good. And do you feel week to week every time you guys appear in a new city? Is it, are you still getting to sort of bask in that glow in front of every crowd?
Oh, we have been more often than not, for sure. Some of the European dates were insane. It was unbelievable. When we were in France, they were so good for us. And, you know, just like, you know, this last Monday, they were incredible. I mean, I'm thinking back to so many different cities. Greenville, they were incredible. Where it's like, oh, my God, you know, we're getting to see the Hardy Boys again. Who knew we would ever get to see them again? And now we're getting to see them again. So, yeah, it is cool. Like, you know, this return and going to new markets for the first time and appearing, you know, for, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it's been since we've been there for the first time in a WWE ring. It's awesome, man. It's so great. And WWE has been so great. They've been so good to us, and they've taken such good care of us. They gave me a lot of time off in June with my babies, and I can't speak highly enough of how professional and how great they've been with me.
Well, I think I heard, and I don't remember where, that you guys had sort of expressed that, you know, this company in the years that you've been gone has changed quite a bit. I mean, tell us about how the atmosphere and just what it's like returning and the place sort of that the company's in behind the scenes.
I mean, it really has. The first thing that, you know, really stands out to me is just that when I started and my brother and I started, it was, you know, we started doing stuff with WWE in 1994. And then, like, we were signed during the midst of the Attitude Era. We started during the Attitude Era. And it was truly like a Wild West type of locker room and backstage area. And, you know, you really had to prove you belonged to survive at that time. You know, it was really hard as far as, like, older guys hazing younger guys and whatnot. And then the company became public, and as time went on, it found its way. And now, through all the trials and tribulations of realizing how stressful and hard, obviously, the career of being a professional wrestler is on everyone's bodies, they're at a point right now, because WWE is so mainstream and such a public company, that they really have been forced to, and they've really picked up the ball and ran with it, and they have had to take care of the talent, and they do now. Like, the testing that we went through before coming back was, like, so stringent and so detailed, and that's what they do with everyone now. I mean, even you take someone like Shelton Benjamin, who's, like, an extremely amazing athlete. You know, he went and he was disqualified because of a shoulder injury. That's how thorough these testings are.
Right.
And I know my brother was worried, like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get through these testings, considering, you know, all the bumps I put on my body for all these years. But they really do. They really cater and take care of the talent more than they ever had in any of my knowledge. And it's just so refreshing. Well, and they're so good to you. They really care about your health, and they want to make sure if you're going out there, you're 100%, you're not going to be doing more damage to yourself.
And
I think back in the day,
go ahead, sorry,
on left days, mm-hmm. It was almost like a badge of honor if you were hurt, and you would go and work through it, you know, even though you would injure it more. Like, they don't allow that stuff to happen now, and they do it in the correct fashion.
Yeah, it's the natural progression of a company that has had incredible mainstream success, and, you know, it's fun to reminisce on the good old days, and things were really cool, but ultimately, if this business is going to continue and thrive, it's going to be adapting and handling things in the way that they're being handled now. Now, do you think, Matt, that there's an opportunity? One of the things I've pointed out, and I want to get to a couple things about what's going on right now with you guys and the company in general. One thing that I feel like the company may lack right now is some level of locker room leadership. It is a new generation, and you do have the clear, you know, bigger names and guys like Roman who are out there and have a family lineage and could play a role like that. But some of the elders are fading on. They're not around as much. Even the guys like Cena, not around as much. Do you think there's an opportunity / does it interest you and your brother to sort of play a bit of a locker room leader role and sort of showing people how things are done and setting the bar and encouraging people to play at a certain level?
I mean, I'm up for giving back and definitely helping out. I mean, that's something I take a lot of pride in, and I love. Jeff, on the other hand, Jeff really is kind of a charismatic enigma, you know, through and through. Like, that's not really his thing. He doesn't really get involved. He doesn't necessarily care. He just kind of does his own thing. But But I definitely dig that. Like, I'm always there to help. If guys have an issue, or if they have problems, I mean, I've pretty much lived everything, good and bad, you know, so I can have some kind of insight on different issues. So, yeah, I'm definitely interested in doing that, and especially at the point I'm at in my life right now where it's just so good across the board. I have, like, the perfect balance of, like, you know, of personal and professional as far as, like, life at home and, you know, life in the WWE locker room and ring. So, yeah, anything I can do to help make the locker room a better place, I'm certainly game for. And I would certainly be up for helping out anyone in any way possible.
How crazy is it how much people love and are excited to see the reemergence of Broken Matt Hardy? I mean, as a fan, I went from the first time I ever interviewed you, I was doing the TNA podcast, to by the time that the Broken Matt Hardy had come along, in full disclosure, I did not watch the product at all anymore, and yet I tuned in live that night. I mean, it was something that, even if you don't watch that product anymore at all, got the attention of the world. Did it surprise you just how much that made it through? Because it had to seem like there were times in which you could sense just how much smaller a company and how much less reach they have must have affected you, and it's kind of annoying. So were you surprised by, like, oh, man, this actually made it through to everyone?
I think that the secret to the success behind all that was just the way we have social media and all the video platforms there are now. And that ultimately became my goal in doing everything that I did. I wanted to do things that would be entertaining gifts or memes or things that would just be entertaining to a casual fan. I mean, there's great wrestling across the board. You know, there's a ton of amazing wrestlers who can have 4-star, 5-star matches in WWE. I mean, and they're in other promotions as well. And when I started going that direction originally, I said, well, I'm gonna give a throwback. I'm going to go back to the Papa Shango days. I'm going to go back to the original Undertaker days and do something a little supernatural, something different. And, you know, fortunately, all that stuff worked out, and I was very proud of it because I sacrificed and took a lot of risk in doing it, and I'm very, very proud of it, you know. And I did everything from using members of my family to funding it myself and whatnot. So I definitely feel confident that before it's all said and done, this will penetrate, the Broken Universe will penetrate into the WWE Universe.
Well, we're wrapping up here in just a couple minutes with Matt Hardy, who, of course, the Hardy Boys against Cesaro and Sheamus on an unbelievable card, July 7th at the Garden. Tickets start at $20. The Garden debut of Shinsuke Nakamura, the Garden debut of Finn Balor. It is now officially a super show. It's going to be really an awesome night. My favorite thing towards the end of your first WWE run was the MVP story. The sort of classic ambivalent friendship that leads to just ultimate betrayal. It felt like, I don't remember the last time that something was given just so much time to breathe. It really was given the time to build and become something that meant something. Was that something that you really enjoyed? Do you rank it among the things that you enjoyed there in the first run? And what else really stood out in that last run of the mid-2000s to you?
I enjoyed the whole feud with MVP greatly. And I think you can tell, like, we had a good relationship. We were, we were good compadres as far as that goes, as far as working together. And WWE also gave us a lot of creative freedom in that story. And I think it's pretty obvious whenever you watch it back, you can see that we have a lot of creative input in what's going on. You know, not everything, not 100%. You know, obviously it's WWE and they want to, you know, they want to make sure they're keeping it in a very specific direction, but we did have a lot of creative input, and I think that's why that was so cool. A lot of things I really enjoyed, man. I mean, obviously, looking back after Attitude Era, when I left and split from my brother, and I did the whole Matt Hardy version one, the Sensei of Mattitude, I loved doing that. I think the whole thing with Edge was very exciting, and it was cool, and it was...
Were you able to enjoy that at the time, though, or was it miserable to do at the time?
It was tough. It had easier days and harder days, you know, but like looking back on it now, I kind of chalk up that whole experience as lessons. I do that with everything in my life, you know, things I've done wrong, things I do right. I look back and I use that as lessons now. And I try and like not make any mistake twice now, you know, and I feel like I got a pretty good grasp on what I'm doing in this little journey we call life now. So I've learned from my mistakes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Looking back at that, the thing that was so cool from my perspective, even being involved in it, was just that viewers weren't really sure where the line fell between reality and fiction, and that's something that is pretty special in sports entertainment.
Yeah, I'll say to me that was one of the most unique. I mean, I think you should write a movie on it one day. It was one of the most unique experiences in professional wrestling that could exist.
Definitely, you know. So it's one of those things. I grew a lot as a person because of that whole deal.
Well, listen, Matt, I just want to tell you on behalf of the WWE Universe and those of us who just really love this art form, such a treat to have you back. And, you know, I always point it out to people, you know, I love story arcs. I love career arcs. And when the last time you guys were in the company, you know, your brother was just absolutely at the top of the game, was world champion, was just as over it can be. And it is very cool to see you guys back. And you guys are both completely over, but to see that when you came back, this character you have in particular, people are so geared up for. I think it's just a special, cool thing, and I pop for it. Every time I see the crowd yelling delete, I want you to know that we as fans sort of pop for it probably as much as you do. So we can't wait to see you at the Garden on July 7th, and congrats on the newborn.
Thank you very much. Now, I just want to say one thing, too. Like, as far as the Garden, July 7th, MSG holds a very dear place in my heart because, like, that's almost the arena, you know, when you've wrestled there, you've made it as a professional wrestler, mm-hmm. you know, especially at WWE. So it's going to be super exciting to come back on July 7th and to be involved in a tag match with my brother and obviously Cesaro and Sheamus. And I know how smart and how witty and how crafty the New Yorkers are. My wife is a New Yorker, you know, from Queens. So I'm very excited to see all them, you know, go crazy with the chants and the taunts and have fun. And it's going to be such a good time. And like you said, it's a great show. All the Raw superstars are there. We have a ton of SmackDown superstars there. Nakamura's debut. So many good things happening that night. I'm excited for the show. If I wasn't wrestling on it, I wouldn't be there watching it. So July 7th, I can't wait to see all my New Yorkers in MSG.
We will see you that night, my friend. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Cheers.